Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs. You're welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. Ring toll-free at 877-876-5227 in the U.S. or 888-810-8322 in Canada. Otherwise, you can ring 530-876-3222. There are a number of services available through our organization, Toward the Light, providing near-death studies and support, Reiki and remote healing, psychic, spiritual, grief, and motivational counseling, NDE books and videos, and other products for body, mind, and spirit. I'd also like to encourage you to help support this program and BBS Radio by making a donation or sponsoring a show. For more information, please visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week, I'm very pleased to have a wonderful guest with us who is the author of the book, When the Angels Have Risen. Let us welcome to Toward the Light, Andrew Feder. Welcome, Andrew, and how are you?
Doing great, and thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, you are so welcome. And first, before we do anything else, let me wish our listeners and everyone Happy New Year, because it is 2007, and it's nice to start a new year with a wonderful radio show, I think. So why don't we start a little bit, Andrew? I really did enjoy reading your book. What of it I could understand, and of course there's a lot of cultural and language differences that I couldn't quite get everything, but I understood the gist of it. And I don't want to put you on the spot or anything, but is this basically autobiographical?
In the very beginning, it is very much reflective of my life. When I originally wrote this back in 2000, and my editor said, put more depth into it, because in the beginning the scenes were moving really quick.
Yeah.
And so then I decided, well, I'll put myself, because they are my essentially reflective of my belief system of what's happening and what has happened, and I tried putting everything in together between spirituality, the question of UFOs and aliens and politics, and I felt they're all one big nutshell, and it's not something just recent. It's thousands of years. So, yeah, basically, I have another book that I've been working on that will be succeeding it, that is actually a linear of my life, which is part of the, I guess it could be the successor of this book down the line.
Well, that's very interesting, because I notice, of course, in the story you do go into the future, which actually, when you think about it, it could be any minute now.
Mm-hmm.
With the way things are going on. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what the circumstances are that led to the writing of this book, and then, of course, feel free to go into a little bit about the story itself, because it is very interesting, and as one who's been to the other side, who's experienced multi-dimensions, and who's experienced UFOs as well, all of that that you wrote made so much sense to me, and it was very powerful. So go ahead and tell us a bit about what led up to the writing of this book.
Basically, I have a background of myself. I lived in Israel during the 80s, and while I was living there, I had a sense of, you know, I always felt that, you know, a spirituality within myself. But life has a way of really, you know, when you try to push away something, it sort of pushes you into what you're supposed to be doing in the first place. When I had gotten married back in 1978, I was approached by a rabbi in Jerusalem who was a Kabbalist and very spiritual. And he said to my brother-in-law at the time, who is a studying, he was a Chabad or inside within Judaism, a very religious faction, and he, you know, said that I should be studying Kabbalah and study Zohar and the mystics within Judaism. Well, normally you're supposed to be like in your 40s studying that. And I pushed that away. You know, I said, oh, come on, I don't want to be religious. I don't want to do any of that stuff. Come on. Well, lo and behold, 2 years later, I go back to Israel. I end up living on a farm. I end up eventually meeting, by circumstance, a very holy person who is, I mean, you walk in his presence, your clothes would literally change color. I mean, you have green, you have blue pants, it turned brown. He was my guide at the time and taught me, started showing me what to read and study. And I studied Kabbalah, and as I was studying the mysticism with the Judaism, I had questions, a lot of the fundamentals within what was it placing it within the biblical events. And I always felt there was something weird connection that's not always, you know, being shown. And I pushed away from that. After eventually I became very religious, came back to the U.S. I met somebody named Janae Sinclair, who she had passed away back in 95, was a renowned psychic and mystic healer, and her husband, Elliot Atlas, who's also a great mystic. And they showed me I didn't have to be religious. And that was actually when I first started going out of body, learning how to do all my metaphysical stuff, and also getting involved with, still in tune with Kabbalistic stuff.
Now, where were you at that time when all of this was happening?
Starting in the beginning of from the 80s, and then when I came, I started pushing that stuff away because I felt I was becoming very religious. When I came in the early 90s, late 80s, I pushed away early 90s. I met, actually in the early 80s, very late, almost 90s, I met Janae and started learning from her and showing that I could be in tune with my spirituality without having to be extremely religious in the sense of doing the mechanics, because I felt that was unnecessary. And then that was when I started unusual circumstance. I started going out of body, and that was like in a controlled state. And first it was not so controlled, and then I learned to do it more on a controlled state. And then I start connecting all the elements. I always had a feeling that within the biblical events and many events that there's definitely a connection with aliens and UFOs, and there was definitely a spirituality connection. And I felt there was what some would say, oh, they're angels. Maybe they were, you know, extraterrestrials. And not to diss that there aren't angels, I believe that there are very angelic realms and angels, definitely both on the light side as well as on the dark side. But I felt that average people would see a circumstance and naively think it was something else. So I try to put this all together. And then, lo and behold, in 2000, I had put everything together from the spiritual end, and when Bush became president, that really compelled me. And that's when I put the whole package together, because I saw people from living in Israel, seeing what was going on with people killing each other over, you know, who God's my God and my land and all that, being involved with seeing all that. And then seeing within the United States, you know, the so-called cultural wars between religious right-wing Christians being very intolerant and imposing their beliefs on everybody else. And through the political system with Bush being president, I felt very compelled I had to do something, especially when he became president. And as an American, also with a sense of liberty and believing in what's really truth and not truthiness. So I try to put all this stuff together, and that's when I put my book together.
Were you in Las Vegas at this time when this was happening?
When I wrote the book, I wrote it in Las Vegas. I lived in Los Angeles up until 1999. And then in the beginning, the book is very much how I came here.
yeah, that's because I was thinking, well, this seems really autobiographical and even somewhat optimistic. It was quite an adventure. So did you experience a sort of abduction or, you know, being, you know, beamed up and what have you.
Well, this is what happened. I had with one of my friend of mine who we came up to Vegas. I believe it was around 95, and we had reached up to Baker, and then from Baker to Vegas, we lost about 2 hours of our time. What happened was, or even more, actually, we had, it was about 10 o'clock when we reached Baker. From Baker to Las Vegas, it's only about half an hour, 45 minutes, maybe an hour at the most to Vegas. This is at 10 o'clock at night. We're driving along, and before, you know, I sort of felt dozy, sort of sleepy-ish. He starts sleeping almost behind the wheel, but driving. And I wake up, and I'm like, whoa, and I see the sunrise. And we're just now entering Vegas.
Wow.
So we lost probably close to 6 hours, because it was then 6 o'clock in the morning. And we did not, we just looked out at each other and was like, oh, my God, well, you know. What happened here? There's like no way.
Well, that's very interesting because, and I think I remember reading about that in the book. And then you actually, or we should say your character, Fletcher, settles into a place and is working, and then he goes on a hiking trip with his workmates.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when he's beamed up. And it's interesting the way you describe the experience of being beamed up into the starship. It really felt like you had had a direct experience and knowledge of this.
Well, what I tried to describe is actually an experience for me when I had gone out of my, you know, body myself.
Body, yes.
Uh-huh. And I just sort of pictured, I didn't know how somebody would be beamed up. And so I'm very visual when I write. So I put together a story, and I tried to describe exactly what I saw. In fact, it's sort of funny because what I did is I already had the idea of the book, the where I was going to do, and actually took a hike through that canyon. And then within my book, I talk about the little, there's a squirrel. There was that exactly happened too, and the mist, all those stuff that was happening was really bizarre, and I kept that as a mental note as the stuff was happening. And then I actually did meditate. There's a little spot I actually did meditate and, you know, feel what would it be like. And then when I finally decided to put, when I started putting it together, I just, you know, visualized and then put together exactly my own experience as far as one LM at one time going out and feeling that. And then I sort of put, what would happen if I came out and then was on that other side and then said, hey, is this, and then questioned the reality of it. Is this, like, that's why in the very beginning you said, is this real? Are you my guide? Because, I mean, I've met with my guides on the other side, and then all of a sudden, you know, and so I was questioning that. And then, so that's what I brought in within the character. And mind you, when you were talking about earlier about the character itself, the only thing I didn't think, I hope I'm not that rude but and that crude, but you'll notice that the language of the person, I purposely made it that he, I mean, you'll find he uses a lot of profanity. He's very rough on the edges.
I noticed, to be honest, that all of the characters in your book use that very rough sort of language, and I thought, oh, goodness me.
Well, I tried to make it as real as possible, but this character really, I made it so that he was a very mind-sense that way, and I purposely did it because I wanted to show people tend to think somebody who is spiritually, who is very spiritually evolved or enlightened is somebody who is, you know, you're all well neat and clean and looking all nice and, you know, and da-da-da. But in essence, it could be somebody the most uncouth, the most rudest person.
Yeah.
And it's like an example, I mean, I don't like to use, but the example would be like, I don't know if you've seen the Golden Child with Eddie Murphy, and there's the guide who's carrying, watching him along as he's going, and he's sitting there picking his nose, scratching his rear end, talking obnoxious, saying everything crude, and yet he hears an enlightened Tibetan, you know, spiritual guide. And yet, you know, and then the guy wearing the suit was the evil guy.
That's interesting, and I admit I don't own a television, never have, so I'm not familiar with these things, and that's part of your book that lost me too, because I'm not familiar with television and television shows and characters and stuff like that. So I was a bit lost there. I am, you know, familiar with. Let's see. I guess it's what's that called? Where they, because I say this all the time. Speaking of the other side, beam me up, Scotty. So I guess it.
That was more. Yeah, that was like Star Trek-y.
Star Trek. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I threw a little. So, because it was sort of a relationship, and that's when he goes up there and he sees, and the guy goes, "Oh yeah, Gene Roddenberry. Yeah, he was a, you know, he was a visitor here too. You know, so people who knew that would go, oh wait a second, that's where he got all these stories from. You know, so it's sort of give a little. It's like a nonfiction with a fiction.
Well, exactly, and I refer to a lot of this as fiction, nonfiction, because it is a way to get important messages out there, and it's interesting. I mean, the whole aura of your story about this being, and what was his name again? Not Joshua, but...
Jerry Fletcher.
Yes, I'm not talking about Jerry Fletcher, but the being that he encountered.
Oh, Yeshua.
Yeshua, that's right. It's very interesting the things that were said by Yeshua, and myself even being aware of everything coming to somewhat of a critical mass. I mean, here I am in New England with the windows open, looking out and seeing green grass, blooming trees and flowers, chirping birds who are nesting, and I'm just very much aware of a gravity around our planet right now, and the climate of the people and the government and what they're doing, and I just thought, wow, this lad, meaning you were very aware when you brought all of this stuff up, because Yeshua was talking about that, and then infusing Fletcher with the message that had to be brought back and shared with everyone on the planet. And it reminds me so much of us NDEers going to the other side, which is really similar in so many ways of being beamed up to a starship or whatever, because we all have profound experiences, and then we are given messages that we need to take back to this plane to share. Interestingly enough, I've been getting a lot of calls and emails lately from seekers who are not even experiences, but people who feel that they might glean wisdom and truth from those of us who've had near-death experiences. And then the messages that you were sharing in your book, I was seeing so much of a familiarity there. There is a quickening, and all of a sudden something happens, and our lives are altered forever, and there's no turning back. Do you ever get a sense that this is going to happen to you, that this will become real life on the physical plane for you?
I really have. It's sort of weird. I get like goosebumps when I wrote this, and when I reread it, and every time I pick up my own book and I read it, I get goosebumps like something connected is going to happen over very quickly in the coming years. We're not even within this year, and I just feel there's a real movement of opening our eyes. I mean, there's a lot of people questioning about whether there's the UFOs and extraterrestrials, and it's becoming more of a given than not a given, and more people are opening it. And I think there's also a connection with our. It's like we only perceive what we want to perceive, and it's like the same thing when people are, I think I believe when you go out, when you have a near-death experience, you're actually really just going out of body, you're being pulled out, and then there's your body down there, and then you're connecting to another spirit, and we're always connected.
Absolutely.
And that's where I think the extraterrestrial side comes in, because I think they're so far beyond within the spiritual realm of dealing and connecting with that, and that's where all this information is still out there coming in, and I think it's coming to a situation where it's become a norm. and people are, and I feel the universe is, especially on this, on the Earth plane, is being pulled. Like, light is now, for years, thousands of years, this plane has been heading onto the dark side, and now it's so much light is being brought, it's becoming polarized, where people are going to go really quickly to the light, or people are going to be pulled straight to or toward the dark, and all by choice. And I also feel that there's like a very much of a situation where that's why you have a lot of religious polarity happening right now, whether it's in the Middle East, this country, all around the world. I mean, events are happening so much that people are just like, specifically in organized religions, are trying to hold back their last, you know, stronghold. People who have who are in power and financial power, and are trying to hold for the last second. And things I think are going to be pulled, where it's going to be pulled so far that that's not going to matter anymore.
Well, you're really absolutely right about that. And I have shared with people, in spite of how dark it is getting out there, that there are these pockets of light that keep popping up and revealing themselves. And I've just, even in the past few days, have been so aware of this quickening. Well, we're just a few days into 2007, so this is interesting. And I was told by another intuitive that this is supposed to be a gentle year and a year of quickening and awakening in many ways, awakening to the possibilities that, you know, that about love and about connectedness and about community. And I've really been moved very deeply by the fact that all of a sudden, as I said, out of the blue, people have been reaching out. I spoke with someone who has just been suddenly on a quest to study and learn and understand things for the past 3 weeks, when he really didn't believe much of anything before 3 weeks ago. And he started going to different websites and reading books on near-death experiences and related topics. And as a result, he's a changed man. I got a call from another individual who's been going through the same thing a little bit longer period of time. It's very interesting, and I feel very inspired by this, that no matter what our path is, that when it's time, there is going to be that cosmic tap on the shoulder by the light force that is going to guide us to a place where we can come to know and experience love, and that is the driving force, that the darkness is really just the absence of light, and that is a temporary situation. It isn't something that is going to prevail. When you speak about this special guide or being on the starship, did you have an encounter or an experience, either out of body or through dreams, where you met such a being? Because there's something very real feeling about it.
My guides.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've had a lot of the conversation I placed within my book is things that I was directly taught on many occasions. And then it was so easy to put out, because one of my guides is a little bit on the sarcastic side to some extent, like, come on, don't you get it, you know? And then we'll show certain things that are, what's, you know, and go methodically and reiterate things until I understood what was really happening. Wait, that's what you mean by that. And then I also played within the Devil's Advocate, with Jerry Fletcher being the cynic. Oh, come on, you got to be kidding.
Yeah.
And I purposely did that a little bit enough for those who are cynical enough to question things within, whether it's the spirituality or the question of extraterrestrials, or questioning, you know, a lot of my book, I was really trying to, it was just funny you're talking about love. I was trying to really sense giving a self-worthiness, self-worthiness, which is a self-love, not a narcissistic love. But I feel that if people had enough self-worthiness and self-real love for themselves and open up and not really, you know, you can, God, I wish I could do better than that, but not hate themselves. A lot of people have so much negativity toward themselves, they throw that on their outside universe with their own thoughts and own feelings, and they also allow themselves to be segregated and become submissive to, you know, those who are in power or those who whether it's the clerics, whether it's, those who are in authority, they should always have a question to, and I wanted to have them stand up and question those certain things, you know, whether it's about the Bible, what they're told about the Bible, what they're told about things within the Quran, whether they're told about from their own government officials, you know, question, you know, and if people had more self-worthiness and believed in themselves, I think the vibration of their own self-love would create a situation where we wouldn't have poverty. We wouldn't even have the economics that we do have now. There would not be an economics of what we now know, because it would be unnecessary. All you would be is trying to improve, and all we're here on this physical plane, I believe, is to heal yourself and rise your vibrational love for yourself and those around you and in your universe. Because if you loved yourself, you're always obviously going to love those around you and what's around you, you know, as well as including your environment. So
you're right about that, and it there's a profound peace that emanates from someone who is centered in love and who is self-aware, who is able to be one's authentic self. And it is very important to question all the answers. It is important to endeavor in our own exploration, as it were, and going into the laboratory and trying things out for ourselves, excuse me, and seeing what works versus what doesn't work. And I really appreciate that you did have these sort of hard-nosed characters. The character Kelly, who was supposed to be British, I guess, although she still spoke very American, and I can give you some English lessons later. But
well, it's funny you say, because my son-in-law, he's British. And, you know, when he saw that, he speaks Cockney English. He's a Londoner. And,
oh, dear, yes.
And, in fact, you might know him, Audley Harrison. He's a contender heavyweight boxer for the Britain. But anyway, it took me a while to understand what he says, but I tried to do as much as best I could as far as English I could. And they go, well, that's, you know, I tried because I wanted, and she, well, I don't want to tell the surprise, there's a surprise ending of the book. And so and you find out who she really is.
Yes, I did. I finished the book and I thought, aha, well, this is not surprising. And it's so true that many people, wear a cloak to look human, but, there are a lot of people who've all got eyes and nose and mouth and arms and legs, and yet that's where the similarity ends. There are people, there are beings here that are very powerful and profound and aware, and they defy all of the laws of the physical plane, as it were. And then there are other humans that just are so disempowered. But the thing that I was going to say about your characters is that it's good that there's a healthy skepticism. Because when people have that, and they have a show me attitude, let me see this, and then they are shown and they have the experience first time, then they know in no uncertain terms that this is real, that we are multidimensional, that we do exist on different dimensions simultaneously. I had a dear friend who is from Huddersfield in Yorkshire, and I'm from Lancashire in England, and she's on the other side now, bless her. She crossed over on Christmas Day a few years back. We used to talk about UFOs and NDEs and this kind of stuff a lot over tea. And we were talking about how UFOs and ETs are interdimensional. And it's kind of interesting that people will see a UFO and then all of a sudden they don't see it at all. It's not like it just moves and fades away into the sunset. It just vanishes because it is suddenly shifting into a different dimension. The same also happens when people cross over to the other side. And so that's why also I was seeing a similarity between, the story of Fletcher, who is beamed up into this starship and he experiences this wonderful love and clarity and being reminded, which is a very important message here, that he is protected and guided at all times, even though he may not realize in the moment. And I was actually inspired by reading these parts of your book, even as Fletcher's going through these terrifying experiences, and then all of a sudden there is divine intervention or what have you. And I thought, yep, that sounds familiar. I've been through that enough in my life. So I knew that what you were saying in a very deep way is so true and becoming more true all the time. And, I admit now that I'm on the physical plane and have been back on the physical plane for a while from my NDEs, I've lost that perfect peace that I had, where there was no sense of fear whatsoever, and I had total confidence that everything was all right, and never a question, and now I'll become very nervous and upset, and oh dear, what's going to happen? And then I read your book, and then something happens, and I'm reminded, wait a minute, Juliet, the light is with you at all times. There's really nothing to be afraid of, even though we are blinded by mortal mind. We've got this imposed amnesia, as it were, and then we forget. We simply forget what is true, what is real. So I think that what you're saying in your book is very timely. And if you don't mind, I want to ask about some contents of the story, because, for example, you're talking about the biblical time of the parting of the Red Sea and how that was really intervention from the extraterrestrials working on behalf of the light. How did this wisdom come to you? Because there's something really special about that.
This is like way back when. This is like when I lived in Israel.
Okay.
One thing that was bizarre when I lived in Israel, I don't know how to explain it, but I almost, from past lives or past life, I know Israel like inside and out. I don't know why. And I know there's other areas like the same thing. And I just felt, as I was doing this studying there, I just felt something connected with there, like to certain areas. And I felt within the biblical events that there's too much things that are unexplained, that I felt that there was definitely an ET correlation. And then I almost felt like that, if you even read like Ezekiel 1, I mean, he's looking at a spaceship, plain and simple.
Yeah.
There's nothing
he can
argue with that. I don't care how way you want to interpret it. He sees a metal object spinning around and around. Lights are coming out from the bottom. He's looking at a UFO, and all of a sudden he has this divine, from that moment, all this divine prophecy comes through him.
Yeah, divine revelation.
So it's like it's a consistent thing, and I felt like the same thing. It's like, I was trying to show throughout my, throughout my book, I have little passages. I use both from the Bible, but also with Dao Tse Tsung. And I was showing that all of them, all religions are basically the same. The mechanics are just different. But they're all talking about, if you get to the bottom, it's about love, and that's the most important thing. They all deal with more of an infinite face of what our realm is, except for Orthodox Christianity, as opposed to what the probably what Jesus believed and I believed back then, and people are just finding out that what the real Christians believed was more of agnostic and more of a universal thought, and didn't get caught up on, you know, Son of God and all that stuff, and it was over
right.
Theology, is over changing the norm of what the situation, which I believe Jesus was trying to really do, which I try to point out in my book. I tried showing their glimpses of events, and I believe these events that were happening, people, because I don't want to change subject, but I believe there's souls who are Earth originate and souls that are alien originate, or star souls, or from
yes,
another.
Absolutely.
And I feel they're all here and me in for to place light within this planet. And I feel all these prophets have done the same thing. And these events where aliens were connected was natural. It became unusual, but it became a more of a common thing. And that's where I put the connections in all the events. This is when Jesus was trying, beamed up. You know, they were trying to beam him up, and he.
Yes.
And I tried to show that as well. And then the character in this is, oh, come on, then, you know, what about him, feeding the poor, you know, with all the fish. And, you know, the alien explained, well, something that would be very simple for them. It would be like explaining a microwave to somebody 2,000 years ago,
yeah.
You know. And so it's situations that I consistently try to show. But I did have a feeling these connections for many years. And I wanted to sort of incorporate it. And I felt it was really important because, you know, too many people, they look at, like, we're the only ones on the planet. We're the only ones in the world. And if they saw that there was maybe, you know, and I was trying to take away from divide. Like I said, I lived in Israel. I saw people, and they do this here, too. They try to categorize people everywhere. I mean, here's you're left wing, you're right wing. You're liberal, you're conservative. You're this, you're that, and, you know, or they look at you from the outside. You're black, white, green, yellow, Jewish, non-Jewish, Christian, Catholic. You know, they already, and then from that, they already prejudge what they think you are. When I lived in the Middle East, I saw the very same thing, very much so. And it's actually so bad that even like I went in Lebanon, for example, they have, you know, Christians live in their village on one hill, and Shiite Muslims on one hill, and then the Sunnis on another hill, and you'll see little rockets flying back and forth, because they're all separate, and they all hate each other for what, and they categorize each other. I mean, when I lived over there, I was now not a Jew. I was like here, I'd be an American Jew. Over there, I was an American, and then amongst the Arabs, I was an Israeli. I was a Jew, and then you know everybody, and then from that they categorize you. Well, you must be like this, like this, like this.
They pigeonhole.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I had a lot of conflicts. Like, I had discussions with people, about whether it's on being liberal or conservative, and they try to peg you. Well, you have to be in all our issues. And I says, no, I'm not. I believe, I don't like to divide. I think, you know, if somebody who's conservative, I'm going to talk to that person. Maybe I don't agree with them. But that's the whole point. We need to, you know, and it's a process of crossing over and showing, you know, love to your fellow man. We're all different. We all have our different views and perspectives. It's showing respect to those other people, and that's, I think, really important. And I think, on a whole, that's where why I was really upset with. I believe God and the universe present certain circumstances to in every situation, and how we react to them is our chance to grow from it. And Bush, like, for example, had his chance when 9/11 happened to become the greatest president, one of the greatest presidents in history. He had the world, people were united. I mean, come on, the New Yorkers were working, living really well together.
Yeah,
I mean,
I remember that because I was there.
And people tried to, and the world was together, and they felt common. And instead of taking that in his hand and making it even better, he divided again into a worse situation, either with us or against us, you know, and then got us in the Iraq thing. And that was one example. And then Katrina, here's something very negative that happened. And here's something showing where we lacked taking care of our own fellow man, our own people, are people who, and how do people react to it? It's like watching on TV. I'm like, well, it's not me.
That's really a shame. And I remember just being in tears when that happened as well. And being a clairvoyant, I tend to see things in advance. In fact, I saw 9/11 10 years in advance of it happening. I was so aware of the tsunami, and I remember being very upset during Christmas and not having a clue why, because there was nothing wrong with me. And then it was that night that I got the news that the tsunami had happened, and I just feel stiff, and I will react from deep within. And then it becomes apparent why I was so deeply affected by this, or feeling disturbed, or what have you. But yes, it was interesting during 9/11 and walking, post 9/11, I should say, when I was walking in Manhattan and just seeing people kind of quiet and actually looking one another in the face, which you don't see in New York too often.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these have been wake-up calls, and I feel that these disasters are allowed to happen to cause us to wake up, to pay attention, to question things, to look more deeply into things, and really to turn to love, because when all is said and done, all of that darkness and negativity will evaporate. It will disappear. But right now we have to face it, because we can't really appreciate the beauty and magnificence of a diamond without the dark backdrop, as it were. So right now we are dealing with very critical issues in our world, and I'm hoping that all of this is going to serve to help bring people together instead of being at odds, because when you're at odds with somebody else, you're at odds with yourself. We are all rays of light. We all come from the light. And back to the light we will go as well. So I think it's really special that people are looking around and questioning just this global warming that is so paramount, so obvious, in the East anyway. I don't know what it's like on the West Coast, but as I said, we've had no winter here on the East Coast at all.
That's what I hear. It's like warm. It's like in the 70s.
Very warm. Very warm. And so this, too, is causing people to say, wait a second, what's going on? You know, what are we doing to our planet? This is a living entity here. So, hopefully all of this is going to lead to people asking questions and coming together and creating community, and then really focusing on doing something about it, really connecting and moving back into the heart center and seeing what we can do to help heal our wounded planet. Are you working on some other projects now?
Well, I have another project. Actually, I have another book that's coming out. It's from this book, actually, is about a year I don't talk about within this book. And I'm going to release that in about 2008. It's already been pretty much it's written. It just, I'm going to go through and pre-edit it, and because my publisher wants to release in 2008. So that would be the next one that's coming out. And that's also, there's, even though it's a little bit more mainstream, in fact, it's sort of funny because it deals with the same general. He gets regressed. He has these very strange dreams and finds one of his past lives. Also having a connection within there with extraterrestrials, and there's a questioning of spirituality. And the book's called The Heretic, and basically which is basically him. And, it's during the lifetime of Alexander the Great, and during that period. So it's sort of like a historical...
So we're going back in history, then, it's not present day.
No, this one, that's where he goes back. But I deal with issues within that book in more of a mainstream, but it very much points, little things I've tried pointing out, that you can relate to what's happening now. If you understand what I mean.
Oh, yes.
And I use those purposely in there. Like, You know, if the world was flipped upside down. You know, and well, basically, one reason why he's called a heretic is because he's like in Greece. He's in Greece, and he's like basically the only hetero in all Greece. So that's already very a minority. He also doesn't believe, and he looks at, he was a Spartan, he was involved with the wars, and he looks at believing in, you know, all these fighting over, you know, my God, who your God, because they used to kill each other over who controls what temple. He thinks that's absolutely nonsense. So there's a lot of similarities I bring in there. And then I also bring into the subject with Alexander, which is sort of losses. He tried actually unifying a lot of people. You know, he was accepting other peoples. When he came to Persia and people, he allowed them to live, you know, which is sort of unusual. He was trying to, I bring little things like that to throw a deal with tolerance, basically. That was the mainstream of my book, of that book, but that won't come out until 2008. And in this book, When the Angels Have Risen, my main hard thing I was trying to present is, you know, people to develop their self-worthiness and self in question, you know, and question the tapes that you've been consistently, you know, thrown out from little to, you know, wherever you are at your lifetime right now. I was hoping people just go, wait a second, I got to go check that out. Wait, what did that, you know, my cleric say or my rabbi? I've had a lot of people very religious, especially Christians, come up to me and after reading, they go, wow, you know what? This sounds pretty, you know, and they can sort of come to terms to it. They see the, you know, that, and that's what I was trying to get to. You know, just a question. And bring some light.
When was it released? When was it published and released?
Oh, it was published in May. And then it was released of, it was last year.
Last year, okay.
Yeah, May, and then it got published in May, and then they finally started releasing it in July, and it then started coming out almost toward fall when it started really coming out.
Of 2006?
Of 2005.
2005?
Right.
Oh, okay, so it's been out a year and a half then, roughly.
Yeah, about a year, a little year and a half, year and a half, yeah, about a year and a half.
So you've had a lot of response from people since that time?
Yeah, and it's really interesting because actually I've had more... it's been doing a lot better. It does a lot better overseas, over in Europe. And I have a really weird, actually positive response, major positive response in the UK.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's like amazing, you know, especially when you talk about Civil War in the United States. And I have Halliburton, President Halliburton in the book. They love that.
Yes.
We all knew that was. Yeah, his name was President Shrub in my book, but my editor said, you got to change that. That's too corny. So, okay, I'm going to call him President Halliburton then. But in this country, it was like East Coast, West Coast. You know, and it's like slowly converging within, in, you know, being doing pretty good. And I've been asked to go on shows and stuff. And for me, it's not just, you know, what I'm not looking for the monetary thing of the book. I'm trying to just help for a message. I'm just trying to whatever light on the subject, you know, to people just to open their eyes. You know, if like a young kid picks it up and reads it, I've given away books. You know, just, you know, if they didn't have the money or whatever or something, and, you know, just so they can check it out and read it and, you know, do my part.
Maybe you could do a version where there isn't so much harsh language, because I found that that was kind of hard to get my arms around. Just really,
yeah, I've had
language.
a couple people, I got my mom. yeah, I've had a couple people, you know, question the vulgarity in the beginning, but then and at first I thought about, you know, censoring and cutting it back, and then I felt, you know what, my gut feeling told me not to, because I really felt if I did that, it would cut short of what it was really trying to put out, what this character was.
Well, actually, all of the characters, that's what I was referring to, that it seemed like everybody except for the ETs were using that same language, that same dialogue or dialect, and so I just thought, whoa, this is very intense. But the story itself is very meaningful, and I do think it's worthwhile. And, of course, that's why I really did want to speak to you, and why don't we give our listeners your website, which is your name, correct? AndrewFeta.com?
Correct. And they'll all have a kick on it, because when they see it, there's a spaceship that lands.
Yes.
And out pops, Buddha, Jesus, Moses, and Muhammad. And when you click on them, they all have to say a little rap about my book.
Yes, I saw that. That was
It's funny because I did that back in July when the Muhammad thing came out with, you know, the drawing and the riots and stuff, and my publicist was freaking out because I was having hits left and right from Saudi Arabia to Pakistan.
Wow.
But I said, no, I got to keep that. I'm keeping him in there. If I'm going to have Jesus and Buddha and Moses in there, I'm going to keep Muhammad in there. And I felt it was important because I was trying to keep it all even pretty much. But, I hope everybody check out, you know, and it's available through Amazon.com. There's links on there as well as Barnes & Noble. There's a direct to my publisher. So you can purchase directly from my publisher. It's also, there's a little bit about myself on there, and you know, and if you have any questions, be happy to answer them. Forward your emails to the Reverend Juliet, and I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay, and again, the website is www.andrewfeder. That's F as in friend, E D as in David, E R. And really, good book, and I look forward to seeing the other book, The Heretic. Is that what you said?
The Heretic.
Are you doing talks or writing any other papers or?
I write a lot of editorials, op-eds in our local newspapers here in Las Vegas. I've had a couple in L.A., in San Francisco, but I've been more or less talking, doing a lot of talks. I want to, down in the future, possibly have my own talk radio show. I've been thinking about that. People have been asking me I should be doing that, and I'm very much inclined to possibly be doing that.
Is there a lot of activity around UFO research and the quest for spirituality and that sort of thing in Las Vegas?
I'd say it's definitely UFOs. People, like, even the most cynical even out here are very open to extraterrestrials. To my surprising, I was like really blown away when you talk to ETs or extraterrestrials or any of that, they're very open-minded here. It's really, which is not surprising because of the situation in Area 51. And it's about a spirituality. There's like almost like a starting to come here. It's sort of strange. I mean, maybe that's why this place, I've been trying to leave Vegas, and it's like gum. I can't leave, and I think that's probably why. It's because it's like, you know, something's starting to take off in this area that's becoming more, you know, I guess it's like light within the dark, you know.
I'm pleased you said that, because I was actually going to ask you about that, you know, because it seemed like Fletcher in the book also, he had something very specific to do there, and so there he was. And again, thinking, well, this is probably somewhat autobiographical about Andrew, and it's also looking at the future. And have you, you know, I was wondering if you were seeing yourself with a special calling or purpose in Las Vegas, and I was also noting that you're still there, and I thought, well, he hasn't been beamed up, or he hasn't been in a Learjet and taken off to some other place in America or in the world.
If that's my what I'm supposed to end up doing, if that is my what I'm supposed to end up doing, you know, I'm not, you know, I know what I'm supposed to do here on this planet, and if that's down the line that I'm supposed to do, I'll do it. You know, I'm not, you know, I don't have a fear. To me, fear is an illusion.
Yes.
And also, I believe there are no victims. There are only volunteers.
Yes.
So I volunteer to do whatever I can to, you know, put a little light wherever there is, and basically act as a bridge, open a door to, you know, without putting my own ego into it. And if the person doesn't go through the door, oh, well. you know, I'm not going to judge it. That's maybe another time or another situation. And I just, you know, just keep on doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I feel like it's like a job.
Yes, well, that's wonderful. And I'm so pleased you've been with us, and I can't believe that our hour is just about up here. So once again, we've been speaking to Andrew Feder, and his website is Andrew Feder, F as in friend, E-D-E-R.com. And the book we've been discussing is When the Angels Have Risen. Great book, and again, people can order that book through the website, AndrewFeder.com, and through Amazon.com. Andrew, thank you so much for being with us this evening, and certainly wish you all the best and look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you, Reverend Julie, and I thank you for having me on your show. It was very much an enlightening experience, and I love your website as well, and you are a great individual. That's all I got to say in a nutshell.
Well, thank you very much, and I guess I should mention my website once again, too, which is towardthelight.org, and next week we will be back with another transmission of Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Happy New Year once again to everyone, and please do remember that only love prevails. Blessings and light. We'll speak.